I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Current Geek, the proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, and he's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
We are your judges of what is geeky and current in the world every fortnight.
Welcome to the judgment bar of Current Geek. Will you be found worthy?
Once every fortnight, we sit in judgment over what you have submitted on Reddit and say yay, or probably also yay.
Yeah, maybe nay. It might be nay.
That's for fine. Imitating horses.
I don't mind a little bit of nay once in a while. Yeah, for imitating horses.
Mr. Ed.
It's good to be back as always. We are here doing it. Got a regular old episode for you today, and we're very excited to be bringing it to you. I did want to make a quick comment about some feedback we got on last week's episode that featured the movie The Wizard of Oz. Just a little shocked and surprised how many people responded to that one and how much they liked that episode. I was worried about that one.
I was worried what you were just about to say right there. You're like,
I was
shocked at how many people hated it. Yeah,
I was surprised. I thought people would be like, I don't know, like, oh, that movie's too old, or you guys aren't, that's not nerdy anymore, or whatever.
You're not my mom.
Yeah, you're not my mom. Go away. You're not my dad. I learned it from you. I thought all of that was going to happen, and instead we got these super nice comments and people going, oh man, I haven't seen that in so long. I was so glad you guys brought it up. I loved watching it again and hearing all this backstory. And then somebody sent me this huge list of like all the stuff that's all the conspiracy theories that aren't, that you won't hear about
did
on the web.
Did you start noticing Wizard of Oz references everywhere after we did that episode?
Yeah. It's like buying
a
minivan.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It's like buying
a car. There was one in Timeless. There were a bunch on in A Quiet Place, of all things. It's crazy.
Oh, real quick here. Sorry. Quiet Place. What's the ranking? Where do you put it?
Amazing.
Whoa. Hold on a second. You reserve those for very special times as best I
Quiet
can
Place
recollect.
Amazing.
Wow. All right. Did you end up in a quiet theater where you could really, get into the silence a bit?
Okay, I think people are making way too much of that. No, our theater wasn't perfectly quiet. A guy had to take his son out to the bathroom in the middle. Mm. But people weren't being egregious. They weren't like, throwing things or yelling or anything. I like it when I hear the audience around me reacting, going like, so that's the fun of being in a theater and seeing it with a bunch of other people and people laughing and stuff. So no, it was not a perfectly quiet theater, but there definitely was that weird feeling, after a certain amount of the movie where if someone did make a little rustle, everybody's like, you're going to get us killed.
It's a very intimate thing too, isn't it? Like just that kind of silence and everybody in the, enjoying that together. I kind of like it. And I like the idea that Jim from The Office is making a cool movie. The guy's got the directing chops, it sounds like. So,
When you marry up like he did.
Married way.
No disrespect to Mr. Kaczynski.
No,
I think he has said those very words in many interviews.
I agree with him. All right, well, let's get to these news headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Ah, speaking of congressional hearings and high public office, Tom, it's the week's geekiest stories.
No, I think that's overselling it. I really do. Listen, we've kind of cobbled together our explanation of what's going on here these days, but every 2 weeks, Scott and I are going to look at the stuff you submit on Reddit, and we're going to pick our favorites out of the stuff that's getting high votes. And we're going to talk about it because we're going to geek out about the things that you geek out. That's the idea. We're not trying to be comprehensive. It's not trying to be the most important stories. This is like, let's all geek out about some geeky stuff. And then on the off weeks, we'll either watch movies or TV shows because this is what geeks do.
That's
they
right.
hang around, they watch movies, they play video games, they read comics, and they talk about it.
Damn
so
straight.
In November, Amazon acquired the rights to produce a TV show set in Middle Earth, you may recall. Amazon said that the project will explore new storylines, preceding J.R.R. Tolkien's The Fellowship of the Ring. So I guess it's after The Hobbit, before The Fellowship of the Ring. They didn't quite say for sure.
They haven't clarified, but that's everybody's assumption, right?
Is right,
between
right.
Them. Yeah.
In addition to a potential spinoff series, I guess it could be even before The Hobbit, though, right?
Right.
In addition to a potential spinoff series, Hollywood Reporter says the show may include material from Peter Jackson's movie adaptations. Now, they don't go any farther than saying that word, so we can debate what that means. Jackson's actual involvement in the project is uncertain, but Jackson's attorney described the deal as a creature of the times, saying that Amazon is taking a page out of the studio's emphasis on franchises. Hollywood Reporter also estimates Amazon's planning to spend about $1 billion. They're committed to 5 seasons of the show. They have the right to make spinoffs. So it looks like what Amazon is up to, Scott, is a Lord of the Rings expanded universe, like, right? A Marvel's Lord of the Rings cinematic universe, and trying to fit it in to be consistent with the Lord of the Rings movies from Peter Jackson.
I would assume that the sort of look and feel, like they've done with the video game adaptations since those movies came out, they've all adhered to the Peter Jackson vision of Middle Earth, the character styles, designs.
Which sort ones?
Costuming. Have? Oh, like Shadows of War and those games. Those games tend to all look like
his
vision.
They fit the style.
And there have been some strategy games, some other stuff. They all kind of stick with that. I think probably smartly so. That's what people recognize as kind of the canon look for all of that stuff. So hearing that the series will follow in those footsteps doesn't surprise me, nor do I think anything else is probably a bad idea, just because you're trying to get as much audience as you can. You're already on a streaming service. It's already sort of a limited access sort of thing. You got to kind of find it for a mainstream audience. So I'm fine with all of that. The big hit, the whole thing for me pivots on whether these stories are any good. And because we don't have source material for these stories, we have to rely on these guys to swoop in and go, all right, we're going to expand on what we already know about Tolkien's universe, and we're going to do it in such a way that is so compelling and rad that you'll say, game of what? Like, you'll really want to come and watch what we're doing. And this really is, don't you think? Like, Game of Thrones getting close to being over, but this is their Game of Thrones. This is their big epic piece, their thing, their giant production that's supposed to suck everybody over to Amazon and make them watch.
Okay, yes. I think that's absolutely what they're hoping for. This is going to be their Game of Thrones. If I were listening to this show right now, I would be halfway through my email to you about calling Amazon like hard to find or an up and comer. Amazon is the reason that Disney is buying Fox. Amazon has more subscribers than most cable television stations. Like, I don't know that that's a proper characterization. It was at one point, but you might want to update that profile in your brain. Because Amazon is actually a dominant player in television. And the fact that they have $1 billion to throw at this thing, I think, is representative of that. But everything else you said, that's the pedantic guy emailing you.
That's okay. Well, let me tell that pedantic guy the only thing I'd say in my defense. If I go ask some average person, let's say my aunt or aunt, depending
on
where you come from.
Your aunt is not average. She is so above average.
She's pretty above average. But if I ask her.
She's super smart, but a little cloistered.
Yeah, maybe a little. I'd probably ask her, hey, what are your favorite Amazon originals? She would, A, not know what I was talking about.
What about if you asked her about ESPN 30 for 30 shows?
Maybe. She might know that. Maybe. She's not much of a sports person.
What about Bravo? Does she watch all the Bravo shows?
She likes Bravo, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if she likes Bravo, what about all the Big Ten Network stuff? She way into that?
She's sort of into that stuff, sure. But she knows where that's all found right now, which is on her...
Big Ten Network? Really? I'm starting to doubt
you. Oh, I actually don't know. Where is Big Ten Network? I should know that. What is
that? Yeah, Big Ten Network is actually a college sports network for the Big Ten.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea if she knows what that is. But it's the whole point. Is like, if you're gonna say
my point being like, yes, you can cherry pick the things that she's interested in and tell me she's interested in them, but there are plenty of cable networks out there that she is not familiar with and will be like, I didn't even know this was on my cable, right? Yeah. But I bet she's heard of Amazon.
That's true. I guarantee she's heard of Amazon, but does she know anything about Man in the High Castle? I doubt it. And that's
How many other shows could you pick, like off HBO, even maybe that she might not?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I used to feel this way when I didn't have HBO, though. I feel like HBO, though, it's their new service after Go and now HBO, though.
It's the things that are less popular, like Issa Rae. It's a great show. It's on HBO, though.
Right. There you go. That's the usage. And there were lots of things I hadn't seen. Like, I had never seen Curb Your Enthusiasm until last year. Uh-huh. And I binged it and it was great. But I felt like I was missing all these cultural references to it. And it just felt like it wasn't. I mean, to say HBO isn't mainstream is kind of silly. But anything that's behind a subscription thing, I feel like you just have a little extra challenge. You're probably right.
I agree with you. And I think that HBO analysis is apt, where people know about it, They may not subscribe to it.
Right.
But more people subscribe to it than subscribe to most other things.
But Netflix, you know it by name and you go, yeah, oh, Stranger Netflix Things. Like, and,
in its
and,
own category. Yeah. There's as many Netflix subscribers as there are cable television subscribers.
Right.
Like, you don't even compare it to networks. You just compare it to whole all-you-can-eat subscription.
Well, plus it has, like I said, has names of shows that are like now household-y sounding names.
So now we're getting to your point, which is the actual, like, if you can tell Tom to shut up and stop being pedantic, the point you're making is really good, which is Amazon needs to catch up with Netflix, and this is one of the ways they're going to try to do it.
Yeah, that is the best point to be made, is that this may do it for them. I mean, is this... let me put it this way. They have a better chance with this announcement and these details making them a much bigger player in what people want to watch when they want to watch it than CBS All Access does with Star Trek Discovery. As much as I love Discovery, that prospect is not as strong as I think this Amazon alliance with the fellow.
Yeah,
with the
well, there's token. A couple things there. First of all, in your aunt's case, she knows what Amazon is.
Right.
She might actually subscribe to Amazon Prime to get the shipping, right? There's a bigger chance of that than that she subscribes for the video. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of people out there who you can say, well, wait, do you pay for the Amazon shipping? Well, you already have this. Check it out, right? Mm-hmm. Versus CBS, which is like, oh, it's CBS, but it's not on TV, and it's a separate thing, and you have to get the app, and then you have to subscribe, and it's Star Trek versus Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
they're equivalent-ish, but where the rubber meets the road is Amazon saying, this is going to look, smell, and sound like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings versus Star Trek Discovery, which is like totally new in canon, but... totally new cast.
And also, hey, you're already paying for it, which you made the point earlier of.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had to tell that to my mom. She thought that Amazon shipped discs to her to see. Kind of the old Netflix models, but she thought she was going to
get. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's and I said, no, Mom, it's like an app now. You can put it on that Roku we got you for that Christmas or whatever. Yeah. And now she's good and she's got
it's
her apps and everything
legitimate
else.
Legitimate assumption from a certain point
sure.
of view.
If I lived in a vacuum and had never heard of Amazon, had no idea what was going on other than they shipped things to me and you suddenly said, well, they're going to do movies now.
Yeah.
That's what I would
assume. Ship movies to you then.
Yeah. Looking forward to it, Amazon.
How else would you get them?
No other way.
I'm not going to watch them on my CRT monitor.
No. Well, who would do that?
That's insane.
Yeah. You're a crazy person.
Yeah, I feel like suddenly we're almost doing a Strong Bad sketch. Hey, a new trailer for Solo, a Star Wars story came out this weekend. It shows a clean, brand new Millennium Falcon, perhaps historic game of Sabacc, Chewbacca hugging another Wookiee. The whole thing premieres May 15th at the Cannes Film Festival. But if you, like Scott and I, somehow had your invitations to Cannes lost in the mail, you can go see it with the rest of the world on May 25th.
Very excited. This trailer confirmed to me that it's a must-see for me. I had my doubts with all the switch-ups with directors and just feeling a little bit fishy about what to expect or whatever. So I was setting my expectations really low. What I saw here is an homage to the things I want, which is, let's get into the dirty underbelly of the galaxy. Let's have some smuggling going on. Let's do some, you know, some stuff that isn't necessarily just Jedi work. You know, can we show that other side of Star Wars, which is the side I kind of prefer and love the most, to be honest. Growing up, that's what I wanted. So I love that. I think that Lando in particular looks dead perfect for the role. I already like a Childish Gambino, but I really, really like him here. it's for reals, like that is the character embodied in just a couple of quick scenes with him, and I'm super excited for what that may mean, what that game of Sabacc might mean. I liked them being canonical with how old Chewie is, even though I know there's some arguing out there about some old books and stuff, but again, the old books don't matter anymore, so anyway.
Well, we know how old he was in Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
And so if he's 190, I think that's what they said.
190, yeah.
I think we're talking 10 years before A New Hope, roughly.
Yeah.
If the people who whose math I'm stealing did their math right.
Yeah. So somebody said he should be 234 now. If you go to current, if we count episode 8 as current.
Yeah.
So it'd be 234. There are some old books that would suggest he'd be in his 400s by now, but again,
like you said, that's why they made those non-canon anymore. So,
right.
You know, also This is a tiny bit of a spoiler for non-canon books. Chewie also not alive anymore.
Right.
He shouldn't even be in A Force Awakens or The Last Jedi.
Sure, I'll take this version where he's alive and well and getting old.
Young and alive versus old and dead.
Yep.
I'm all for that.
But what do you agree with me, though, on like the whole just like there's some grit and some street wiseness going on, and just it's not just shiny, pretty Star Wars with a lot of, you know, optimistic Jedi thinking here.
I agree. That was not the thing that stood out the most to me when watching it. But I definitely agree, and I'm excited, and I hope you're right, that we get a smuggler movie.
Yeah.
That, you know what? I would be fine if we go through this whole movie and nobody even mentions the word Jedi. Just don't. It's old. It's outdated. The Empire is discouraging it. Like, why would anyone even bring it up?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go straight smuggler's blues and have Han Solo. The first time he uses even hears the word Jedi in his life is when Kenobi says it on the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah,
right?
That, like, or you remember some ancient talk about some old religion.
Yeah, yeah. He read something on a newscast, heard something on a newscast once about it or something.
Yeah, let him be all starry-eyed and it's all real in 7. Let's have this old thing just be, I'm trying to make my way in the world today, and it's taking everything he's got.
Absolutely. I am very curious about Chewie's relatives.
Yeah.
I'm definitely like this trailer. It definitely worked well for me. Yeah. It shows that they're finally pulling things together, which was the big worry when Ron Howard took over, which is, do you have enough time to actually complete this movie competently? Mm-hmm. But there are rumors, and Lord Miller have said, don't believe everything you hear, but there are rumors that the reason they were taken off the project was because they were not keeping to schedule to Kathleen Kennedy's satisfaction. Mm. And so it wasn't that they weren't doing a good job. It's that they needed to finish on time. Kathleen Kennedy did not want to change the schedule. And so they brought in Ron Howard because he's a workman, right? He can just make stuff happen. And he pulled it all together and finished it up. So if that's the case, I'm very optimistic.
Yeah.
If Lord and Miller are right and I shouldn't believe everything I hear, then I'm still worried.
Right. I mean, if they're right, or if those rumors are right, then the foundation's strong. He just had to come in, kind of finish things up.
All right. TVZ Gon's in the chat room say, we already met Chewie's relatives.
Yeah, we did.
We did in the non-canon, the definitively non-canon Life Day. But how cool would it be if his mother or son were in Solo, Star Wars.
I'd be all into it. By the way, Tondragosa wins the day for me. He says, the Hokey Religion and Ancient Weapons podcast is where Han heard this. So there you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nicely done.
China announced a system back in 2014 that ranks people based on social credit. The methodology is secret, and it currently can be implemented differently depending on who's doing the ranking. Since that differs by region, city councils do it in some cases, private companies are contracted to do it in others. But millions of people have already been restricted through this beta test of the system from things like buying business class tickets. Like, you're not a very good traveler, you got some dings, so you have to fly coach. Other people restricted from traveling in general. The program is due to be operational nationwide by 2020. Now, there's not really a news hook here. Business Insider just did a story on it because it's clickbait. But it is a real thing. And as Big Fat and Smellier, who submitted this on our subreddit, pointed out, it's very much like a Black Mirror episode or even like a Cory Doctorow novel.
Mm. I mean, I don't live in China, so I can't say.
Yeah.
I'm no Chinese expert either, but
listen, neither one of us are living in China or have lived in China.
No, I lived there.
You're the only one of the two of us who's even been to China.
Yeah, I was there for 9 total days, 7 of which were not part of a travel mess. So 7 days with my feet on the ground. And even then, I don't think I can call myself a resident of China. However, on the face of it anyway, this is a little freaky, but I would also say it doesn't seem that, I don't know, it's in keeping with the Chinese control over flow of information a little bit. And I don't mean that in a hyperbolic way. They know, they've got rules and stuff that they as a culture and a government see as appropriate that I may disagree with, but this doesn't seem too far out of that, especially in an evolving world where social footprint matters, you know? I mean,
yeah, China's a difficult one for people in the U.S. to get their head around, because it's tempting to mix up cultural difference with political difference.
Right.
And certainly China has a history of severe oppression. And a lot of people forget that that's not still happening. Right. You know, Chairman Mao is not taking people on the Long March anymore. Like, that all ended a long time ago.
Right.
But that's not to say that there isn't still some repression going on. But it's really hard. I'm really glad that you put things the way you did, because it's really hard from the outside to tell, well, that's just different. It's just a different way of doing things. They do things different in Alabama than they do them up in North Dakota, too. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it's political repression. Also, not using that to excuse actual political repression.
Right.
What they're doing in Tibet, definitely political repression,
sure.
Religious repression. Like,
sure.
They, you know, it's a tricky issue. And this one is firmly with one leg in each side. Mm. Like, there's a part of Chinese society that, if you look at Confucianism, seems to have always worked like this. Like, you need to earn credit with your peers.
Yep.
And when you do, you're rewarded for that. And when you don't, you're punished for it. And that's just, it just fits in the way things have historically worked there. On the other hand, restricting people from travel starts to make my spidey sense tingle.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't like it.
Free. Telling me I can't buy first class because I've been a bad traveler? Okay, that's one thing. Telling me I can't travel, that's a whole separate thing.
Yeah, that's where it gets murky for me as well. I don't know, man. Like, I kind of hate it, to be honest. But
it's all about who decides, right?
Right. It's who's watching the watchers and all that. The whole thing smacks of a Black Mirror episode. But I'm kind of convinced that someone's doing that to me here. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic with that either. But what I mean is, I have social profiles of me. Now, nobody's acting on them to limit what I can do.
Right.
Best I know. But we should all be under some understanding, I think, that the stuff we put out there does categorize us in ways that mostly means what ads we're going to get. But in theory, it could mean more than that. And so I guess part of me is like, China, what are you doing? And then part of me is like, yeah, we're not very good at this in general yet. We're still sort of figuring it out, and who knows what.
Well, and how it works is really the biggest deal. Like,
right.
As long as it doesn't threaten my human rights, that is a big question. It should not threaten human rights. And if it's not easily gamed, and that's probably my biggest question, is like, okay, but how about somebody who games the system to punish someone they don't like and make them look bad on this sort of thing?
Sure.
There's all those safeguards.
Spot Monk in the chat room says, I think everybody should just have upvotes and downvotes on a badge on their chest.
Sure.
That is I think that's a literal, maybe not the badge on the chest part, but that's a literal Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, no, that is the Black Mirror episode. They swipe it. Oh, it's not on their chest.
Yeah, that's right. It's like swiping, or you kind of just do a little infrared deal or whatever. And that was a weird episode. I don't know. Made me uncomfortable. That's the idea.
I really liked that episode and thought the director was brilliant. Send me upvotes, director.
Nice.
Virgin Galactic conducted its first rocket-powered spacecraft test in more than 3 years. Spaceship 2 deployed the USS Unity to fire its engines and bring the craft to 1.5 the speed of sound. I remember there was a fatality involved. There were fatalities involved in their last test. So this is them getting back up off the ground. Virgin Galactic plans to reuse its platform to bring tourists to suborbital altitudes for a mere $250,000 a trip.
Now that sounds like, you know, that's money. That's big money for me and you. But
I'm not ever going to pay that money.
Right. But
is more than a house down payment, even in Los Angeles money.
If I was Mark Zuckerberg though, and I had, you know, $1 billion, I'd probably consider this. Like, why wouldn't I do this?
Yeah, maybe.
It's reasonable, even though, I mean, I think I owe that on my house, that amount. So, you know, puts it in perspective.
I don't even owe that much on my house.
Yeah, we still owe about two. Well, ours.
You bought one more recently than
we did. We're about 219 actually, and when we started, it was 335. But all of that being said, those are what the big ticket items are for your average person these days in this country. Those are the thing: your car, your house, or whatever. The idea that this is a ticket to go anywhere would be ridiculous. But the fact that this isn't in the millions, I actually think that's a pretty good price for what you're getting. Like, low orbit trip to wherever, $250,000 seems like that's lower than I would have thought it would be, I guess.
Yeah. I'm going to wait for it to come down. And I don't mean the plane, I mean the price.
Well, we'll get like a Groupon and do it together. Save some money.
Yeah. What is your price? What would you pay to be able to say I've gone to space?
And this is
because like, that's really what this is. It's a suborbital flight,
right?
That just gets you up out of the gravity well. It's a little bit more than a vomit comet, which is the, you know, when the plane takes you up high enough that you float and then you come right back down.
Yeah.
But not much.
Right.
So how for so you're basically talking about like, yeah, man, I've been to space.
Can I be comfortable? Or am I covered in like hardware and a big bulky
suit? Covered
in
vomit is probably what you're covered in. But no, you're strapped. You're able to float. That's the idea.
Okay. So then
you're strapped in on the way up, obviously, and then you can unstrap and float.
And how much floating do I get to do? Do we know the total float
time? I don't
time?
Know. That's a good question. I don't know what your time limit is.
I feel like for 250K, we should at least get, I don't know what the speed at that low altitude or relatively low altitude, I don't know what the speed at which we will rotate the Earth or how many times we will, or that we'll rotate around it, but I think it should be a set number of those. So I want to be able to see, you know, I want the rule to be, you'll see North America 8 times in your time up there. And while you're at it, float around and make little orange juice bubbles and then try not to puke. All right. Then we'll go back down. Like I need time up there for this to be worth 250. But all of that being said, when this becomes like a thing I do, I don't know, like, I mean, I don't even think I do it at this price. So now I'm double thinking. I think 10 grand there.
Okay. And so here's the other part of this equation is it's 250,000 now because nobody can do it, right?
Right.
You have to be Lord British to be able to to buy a seat on a Russian rocket.
Yeah.
Once the first few people do this, then they get to be really cool. Like, hey, you know what? I've been to space, baby. Yeah. You know, and check this out. I've floated around in space. Not many people can say they've done that. I've done that. But the more people that do it, the less special that story becomes. And as that story becomes less special, that price starts to fall because you're not buying the bragging rights as much anymore. Because
yeah.
They're like, oh, well, yeah, I met this other billionaire that did that too. Like, oh, you. Then it becomes all the millionaires have done it. Then all the people who own houses in Salt Lake City have done it. And then
oh, we don't want that group up there. I can promise you that. But here's my thing. Like, if it gets cheap enough, then I mean, it's definitely, but the problem is by the time it gets cheap enough, then it's passe and I'm not going to care. Like that's how this will go because right now it's priced out of everyone's reach or a lot of people's reach and just the 1% will get to do it. And that's fine for now. We'll revel in their fun and their success. They're all going to barf up there anyway. It's fine. This isn't like
when
a
it's cheaper
class.
Than flying to Toronto. I'll do it.
Got nailed it. That's it. That's the measurement. Current one-way flight to Toronto. How much am I getting? And that's what I'll
round
pay.
Round trip flight.
Oh, round trip. All right. Yeah. You don't want to stay there. You don't want to get stuck in Toronto. F that.
Oh, Toronto's lovely. What are you talking about?
I mean, it's a great town. Everyone should go there.
YYZ. Rush wrote a great song about your airport, Toronto. You're lovely. Don't change.
Good album.
More than 50 AI researchers from 30 countries signed a letter expressing concern about a partnership between the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology, a.k.a. KAIST, and weapons manufacturer Hanwha Systems. Shin Sung-kool, president of KAIST, said the project is focused on efficient logistical systems, unmanned navigation, and aviation training systems. The signatories of the letter said they would discuss the response and the relationship between the institute and the manufacturer before lifting the boycott.
This is how Firefly started, right? If we look in the future, if we go to the future.
On Earth that was?
Yeah, it's the Earth that was. It's all... run by everybody but us and the Europeans. Now it's all Asia, and that's fine. We'll just learn a little Chinese.
Wait, that's where you're going with
this
story?
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Because it's in Korea?
I'm telling you right now, the Koreans...
I mean, China actually has the big lead on AI.
Sure.
China and the U.S. All right, that's Firefly. This is Korea.
Yeah.
I know you know this because... You
have I have Korean relatives from Korea, sisters. Yeah. But my point...
Oh, I'm telling you this.
My point is... Yes. Yeah. Please show me on a map where South Korea is. But I just want it to be stated that at some point we need to be ready for this idea. I mean, our national ego needs to be ready to accept it when it happens. And it may have already happened or is happening. But at some point, the South Korea, China, Japan, Taiwan, everybody over there is going to just leapfrog everybody else when it comes to technology.
This cracks me up. Do you know why this cracks me up so much?
Why?
Because the story is people protesting that AI is being used to fire guns without human supervision.
Yeah.
And you went right to the like, see, they even got guns that'll fire. They're done.
I had to go full xenophobic on this.
Let me tell you something that'll make you feel better.
All right.
A similar protest was held by Google employees over Google cooperating with the Department of Defense in the United States on AI.
Well, then it's all good then. Everything's fine.
There's balance.
Yeah. You brought balance back to the Air Force.
Yeah.
Well, I wish those protesters the best in trying to stop this unholy rise to power that all of Asia will soon make as they put us underfoot.
I am usually very skeptical of protests against AI. I think it's something that's worth keeping an eye on, but I don't think AI is good enough yet. And I know that the argument against that is like, yeah, now, but once it starts advancing, it advances fast. And that's why we have to be ready. I'm like, okay, maybe. This story, on the other hand, is, I think, very appropriate because, dude, it's not ready. Don't put it in guns.
Yeah.
Samsung apparently has some AI in robots that patrol the DMZ in Korea, but they are supervised by humans. They are remote controlled. The AI is only used to inform the operator. They don't actually operate, although apparently they're capable of being turned on and having the AI operate them autonomously, which frightens me to death.
So when somebody like Elon Musk comes out and says, we got to watch out for AI, this is going to be bad if we're not careful, like he gets all, you know, gets everybody all in a panic and a lather about it. Is that a good thing that somebody in his position of innovation says such a thing? Or do you feel like it's creating a bigger panic than there should be for something like AI?
I think that this organization protesting is a better expression of concern than Elon funding clickbait documentaries.
Ah,
and I love Elon Musk, but I think he's over the top on this one.
All right, you said it. You heard it, everybody. Mark down this date. Thank you to all of our submitters at Reddit. Reddit submitters. Hey, how do you all like the new Reddit layout? I think it's weird, but I'm getting used to it. So there's that. That's probably a whole show we could do on that. But anyway, I want to thank everybody who submitted these stories and stories like them. Tom, who do we have to thank this week?
Well, this week we received submissions. They got voted up by you, and we talked about them from Jeff Rose, his twin brother Jeff Rose. I already mentioned Big Fat and Smellier. We think he smells just fine, but
yeah,
okay.
He's fine.
And also very svelte. Metal Pony and Kilmarnock.
Oh, Kilmarnock.
All the folks.
You know what? Kilmarnock's a great idea. We should all kill Marnock.
No, poor Marnock. He doesn't deserve
that. He's an evil space lord. It's time to take him out.
Yeah, but even evil space lords have a heart.
They do. A lot like our listeners who support us on this show. Did you know that if you like Current Geek, you can easily support us? It's actually so simple. Even an AI child could do it.
If the COPPA allowed it, even someone under 13 could do it. But they can't because it's against the rules.
That's right. Don't fake your dates. Anyway, you can go support us over at patreon.com/currentgeek. It's a great way to support the show and show us your love. So we encourage it. And for those who already do, thank you guys so much. And for those who don't, consider it. If you like this content, it's a great way to do it. So go check that out. All right, now, we're going to do something a little weird. It's a pop quiz, but not for who you think.
America scores and wins.
Oh, I'm so excited. Right. Who's our surprise pop quiz guest, Scott?
Well, let's just see. Let me check the notes. Oh, it's Tom Merritt, everybody. Tom Merritt. You know him from such things as the Daily Tech News Show and a bunch of rad books you should read. Tom, I'm going to ask you a series of questions in areas of your expertise. If you get them right, you're going to hear this. When you get them wrong, you'll hear this. Either way, I don't know. I guess since you're the rule maker, you can really play fast and loose here. But
I will apply the rules to myself as with the same amount of equanimity as I've applied them to everyone else.
I like this. You're like, what are you? You're a trusted legal guy.
Yes.
Here is your question.
That's what they call me.
Starting with this one. By the way, the reason these questions are happening today is because The Expanse is coming back for its third season this month. Actually, this weekend. Wait.
I have to sit down.
Is it?
It's coming back tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay, I'm so excited I can barely stand it.
Hey, I got one right.
Sorry, not a question.
Damn.
Your first question is, and this is going to be all about that series and the books they came from. They're not going to be hard-ish. Mm. I mean, we'll see.
Until I blank and embarrassingly can't remember, like, even my favorite characters.
Well, I believe in you. So here's your first question.
All right.
The series' first season is based on the first half of the book Leviathan Wakes, as you and I know. The first book in the Expanse series of books. What are the titles of the other books in the series so far? Bonus points if you can tell me the one that's coming out later this year.
I never can remember the names of the books. And you want me to name all of them? Yeah, this is going to be easy.
There's a total of...
Caliban's War.
Okay, that's second book. Got it. Ding. Oh, ding.
And then there's Protomolecule Phones Home.
That one is... that's and, not a name.
Miller Takes the Case.
Definitely not in there. That's not there. Anymore?
Aphrodite's Child. The one I just read.
Yeah, what was that called?
Nemesis Games.
Yeah, that is actually, that's one of them.
That's actually right.
That's really good. You got that one.
Yeah.
Is that, you know any more?
Porphos calls it a day.
Close? No, actually not close at all. All right, I'll tell you what the rest of these
are. I could never remember them when I'm reading them. Like, when I try to recommend anything that isn't Leviathan Wakes, mm-hmm. I was so glad they called it The Expanse for TV, because I don't know why I block them.
Same with Game of Thrones. I'm glad they did that. At first, I was kind of bugged by it, but then I was like, no, just keep that one name. Do the whole show like that. Don't call it all the other names. So here's what you missed. You got Leviathan Wakes, of course. Caliban's War, of course. Abaddon's Gate was released in 2013. That was the next book. Cibola Burn... on June 17th, 2014. Nemesis Games, which you got correct, from 2015. Babylon's Ashes came out in 2016. Right. And Persepolis Rising last year. And this year we get Tiamat's Wrath. So there's that. Very exciting. All right, next question.
Okay, that could have been the whole quiz.
That,
all right,
I know, that one question was a big one. All right, this is easier. Two, what does not appear... until the second book in the series, or who, I should say, not what. Who does not appear until the second book of the series, but has been added earlier to be able to portray the politics of the Expanse universe more deeply, as the politics are explained by internal monologue in the book, a technique TV struggles to utilize. So what character is that?
Oh, are they talking about Bobby?
Incorrect. The answer is Christian.
Christian Avicerala. Yeah,
that is correct. She was not in the first book, but she appeared in the first season of the show.
But I think also Bobby didn't appear till...
She didn't show up till two, I thought, in the second season, right? Or did she
but
come
she,
sooner?
She was in season one, no?
No. I think it's two started with her out on the Martian Ridge.
Season
that
two
incident.
Did? Or I thought that... I know the book two started with her out on the ridge.
Thought it did, but someone could correct me. Chat room, you guys remember? I don't remember.
I'm not arguing.
No.
Because Christian is a correct answer, and arguably, when you said political, I should have.
It's all good. Listen, man.
She appeared in Caliban's War, but they don't show the TV appearance.
Now you know how all our guests feel.
Oh, I believe in that.
Next question. What famous work is the name of the ship, the Rocinante, taken from?
Don Quixote.
Oh, look at you. Nailed it, by Miguel de Cervantes. That movie's finally happening with, what's his name? Anyway. In the books, the character Miller is almost a foot taller than the series protagonist Holden. However, the actor playing Holden, Stephen Strait, is how many, roughly, you can be rough if you want, and we'll still give you points, roughly how many centimeters taller than the actor playing Miller, a.k.a. Thomas Jane?
6,247.
You are incorrect. The answer is 8. 8 centimeters.
I was close, though.
You were so close, it was just licking the edge of the answer.
7, 8.
Final answer, or final question. Both Thomas Jane and Kaz Avnar have ties to Marvel live-action films. What comic character do they have in common? I made this question up on my own, by the way. This is all from me.
Moon Knight.
Does that have come out? Incorrect. There's no Moon Knight film that I'm aware of. So here's the answer. It was Thomas Jane in The Punisher, 2004's Punisher. He played the main character Frank Castle in that movie. We film sacked it. In fact, it was a Nerdtacular. Maybe it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. Oh, no. We did the old, what's his name, version of Punisher. The 80s one with I Would Break You, that guy. Anyway. In the follow-up movie, so they made a sequel to this thing, Kaz Avnar played a plastic surgeon in that. He, of course, plays your pilot in The Expanse. Tom, you've done well. As scorekeeper of the show, how will you objectively score yourself?
The final total comes to 1.
Oh my gosh, 1, everybody.
1. You know why? So I can say I won.
Well done. It's very good. I'm super impressed with how you did there and how well it led to this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Sorry, I cut you off.
Apparently Moon Knight relaunched a few months ago.
Oh, the comic or what?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I'm a big Moon Knight fan.
And TV Zegon's good friend from high school is doing the art.
Moon Knight is basically Marvel Batman. Yeah, basically he's Batman.
I have no depth of comic knowledge at all.
Yeah. Well, you like a good comic story, though. But
I do. Yeah. But I mostly have read DC, and I didn't read a lot of comics for a long time as a kid.
Yeah. And you're like me. You lean pretty indie, don't you? You like indie comics.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I'm still reading Walking Dead.
Yeah. I like the weird ones. I like the weird offshoots. I like the one-offs.
Yeah, like Incorruptible, Irredeemable.
That was so good. Irredeemable was amazing.
Yeah.
That should be a movie. Make that movie. Then you can make an evil Superman and not feel bad about it, DC.
Yeah.
Jerks. Sorry, I'm mad at DC still. All right. Hey, it's forecast time. It's where we predict the future in various ways, pop culture, technology, the whatnot. Tom submitted one today that I think is super interesting. Why don't you describe this?
Now, I described it in our rundown a little bit incorrectly. I wrote elected officials will be chosen by machine intelligence. Mm. But what I mean is, there will be a country, probably not the United States, because we're stuck in our ways now. We're old-fashioned. We're 1700s democracy. It'll take a lot for us to change. Sure. But some new country will come along. I don't know when we're going to get a new country, but whatever. It'll be a revolution. Maybe it's Cuba. It'll start fresh.
Sure.
And they will use machine intelligence to identify people who will do a good job at particular offices. So this may not be used for president or prime minister or anything like that, but foreign minister, Department of Economics, Secretary of the Interior, Secretary of Education, machine intelligence will say, oh, here are the people, you know, based on the objective standards for performance of previous holders of the office and what their capabilities were. These are the people who are most likely to do a good job, and there'll still be a vote, but the nomination of the candidates will come from a machine intelligence saying, these people will all do a fairly good job. Now you decide which one actually gets to try it.
I agree with you on its origin. Like, if it's going to happen, it has to be where the stakes are a little lower. And by that, I just mean doing it to somewhere where they've got long traditions and, you know, sort of, it's all hammered
in. You're never going to do it in the UK or the US. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's going to happen. Like, Estonia's really good at experimental stuff. Maybe they'll give it a whirl.
Yeah, I like it. I think there'd have to be some pretty significant innovations in AI and sort of predictive stuff for it to.
It's getting better at this kind of thing, mm-hmm. where it can say, "Oh, we see trends, and we give us a good data set here." It's all about the data, right?
Right.
We can get pretty good at, you know, we always see the impressive things like, oh, it can recognize dogs or cats or whatever, but it can also recognize trends and make predictions. It's actually already being used in human resources to weed out candidates for jobs.
Yeah.
So you have a job listing, list of experience, you feed the resumes in, and then the machine learning algorithm can narrow it down to say, here are the ones worth looking at. You call them in for an interview. We're not going to make the hiring decision, but we'll narrow down the choices for you. And that's essentially what I'm suggesting here, except for elected office.
It would also work pretty well, especially on the local level, like new sheriff, and I don't mean like old timey sheriff. I mean, like, you know, an elected sheriff, whatever of a county. That would be a great way to do that. Here's the question I'd have for you. And this is maybe too much into the minutia of how it would work out politically, but are we getting nominations this way and then voting on a group of, okay, so that's how
that's
it works.
That's the key to my prediction, is that this isn't the machine intelligence sitting up and saying, this is now your Secretary of Education. My word has been spoken. This is, hey, you have a really crappy way of nominating that's susceptible to graft and lobbying and all the wrong people getting nominated. We'll get rid of that. we'll have the machine intelligence go, well, these are the people who are qualified, you know, and live in the area and should be there. And of course, people can decide to like, no, I don't want to be considered. That's fine. You get choice over it. And we decide the final person who gets elected to the office as a populace.
I like it. How would, okay, other question. Are people in your scenario, do you think that they are culled from an automatic sort of database, everybody's got something on them kind of deal? Or do these people have to come forward and say, I'm quite the strategist and should be considered for Secretary of Defense, so therefore I want my name to be submitted among these names to be considered? Like, how do they get in there to be considered in the first place?
I haven't thought this through very far, but my guess is that the kinds of people who we already could do this right now, roughly, we could go out and say, okay, in Salt Lake City, who are the people working in education?
Right.
Who are the people who are recognized in their field as doing a good job? And what do we already know about them? What's their experience? What's the record of the schools? Like, there's so much public information on that kind of stuff that we could probably cobble this together ourselves, or scrabble it if we're using LastFM some reason, and it's 2008. cobble this together. So I'm guessing that, you know, we'll have larger data sets and the ability for people to self-identify, perhaps, put their name into the ring. I kind of like it to just be open, theoretically, of like, hey, if you live in the district, you could get picked, and it just goes out and takes as much public information as it can and creates a list. But I realize there's problems with that as far as like, well, you won't get as much information that way. And if you have people self-nominate, they can volunteer access to information, et cetera. So a lot of other pieces have to come into place as well, as far as data portability and consent and data privacy and all that.
Yeah. I mean, we may end up having to use this Chinese style database thing we were talking about earlier, their social database.
Well, I feel like we're going the other way these days. In the US, we're talking about cracking things down. What I'm hoping is one of these projects that's trying to containerize data so that you as a user can grant permission to and revoke permission on a case-by-case basis, we'll make it so that we can have these rich data sets for good uses without risking them being used for nefarious purposes.
I really like that idea. Weren't you, Tim Berners-Lee's got something he's working on that's in that vein? We talked about it on DTNS or something. I forgot what it's called.
I can't remember the name off the top of my head now.
It's really cool, though. What I read was really nifty, and it seemed like, I don't know, I don't want to say it's the most innovative thing since the web, but it might actually
solid.
Be.
Solid. It's called Solid.
Okay. That's what it was.
Solid.mit.edu.
That could be revolutionary stuff if people get on board. And things like it. I'm sure that's not the only project going. But yeah, I would rather grant my permission. And then basically that's the running for office part of your prediction. You know, you still run for office, but running for office is no longer spending umpteen amounts of money, trying to fundraise, constantly getting your name in front of people. Especially for these jobs that aren't the main one.
Well, I mean, you can do that. I think there's a whole separate conversation to be had about the place of money in elections and its outsized influence and what kind of influence it grants. But I think this would take a lot of that out of it, because these people would already be working in the industry and be qualified. Not that they couldn't be bought, and we should have safeguards against that, but it really starts to limit what you can do in that situation. You can't just put somebody into a position that they are not qualified to be in, which happens at the highest levels of government now.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, isn't that true. That's all I'll say about that. Hey, thanks for the awesome prediction there, Tom. It was awesome. And that means it's time for an email. Yes, that's right. Your feedback. We get them here at currentgeek@gmail.com. That's currentgeek@gmail.com. And we got one from Todd, who wrote in and says, hey, Current Geek, you guys hear about the Game of Thrones battle scene that took 55 days to make? Any guesses as to what we might get there? Just curious. So I assume this is something Todd heard about upcoming season. I did a little Googling and found that there is indeed talk of a battle that took 55 days to film, just to film, not counting editing and effects and all that. And the answer simply is we don't know, because he hasn't written this far yet. Who knows what that battle's about?
Well, I can make some guesses.
Okay. What do you think?
It's the final battle.
I mean, all we're going to get, you know what? Tom's right. Because they're like, done after this.
I don't want to get too spoilery if people haven't read Game of Thrones or watched Game of Thrones, but it's the final season.
Yeah.
Presumably there'll be at least one big battle that decides everything before the end of the story.
I think that's the answer. Guess what? Guess what we think, Todd? This is the final fight in this series, at least. Now, whether this is the final big thing in the books,
I know that doesn't really answer the question.
It's a good guess, though.
Todd's out there like, yeah, I know. I meant, like, who's going to be in it? Is it going to be dragons? Like, come on, give me something.
Well, I'll also predict that there'll be dragons in it.
Yeah.
There will
be. Obviously, there'll be at least one live dragon.
Possibly a dead one.
Possibly a dead one.
A whole bunch of dead guys, probably. A bunch of White Walkers. Probably going to get some...
It's going to be epic, though. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen united, leading the men and women of Westworld to the wall to face the oncoming storm of the Night King.
You said Westworld. You meant Westeros. And I agree with you.
Did I say Westworld?
Yeah, I would love that. A bunch of robot cowboys.
No, it's going to be a crossover.
A bunch of robot cowboys.
Westworld season 2 will end with them entering Westeros.
Yeah. My queen, we are being besieged by robot cowboys. What shall we do?
Enlist them to our aid.
So, yes, everything Tom said is probably going to come to fruition.
Except for the Westworld part.
What I really hope for is... one Tyrion Lannister on top of the mountain's back on his shoulders, yelling at the top of his lungs, "Who runs Bartertown?" That's what I really want. That's what I really want. Now, you might say, Scott, we already have that in a little movie called Beyond Thunderdome. I'm just saying, that'd be a great way to end things. Final scene, Tyrion going, "Who runs Bartertown?" And the whole crowd, "Master Blaster runs Bartertown."
The Night King and Jon Snow go into a cage and they say, "Two undead enter, one undead leaves."
All right. I've never been more excited about Game of Thrones than I am right this second. That's fantastic. All right. Big thanks for the email, Todd. Others, if you're thinking, man, I want to say stuff on here, you can. currentgeek@gmail.com. Next episode is an autopilot episode. And guess what? We're changing gears a little here. We usually do like, oh, it's some drama from here or some kind of... important sci-fi thing from there. No. We're going down the comedy road. We're going to look at the first episode, the pilot episode of possibly the most influential three-camera laugh track comedy ever made, Seinfeld. Now, some could argue. Maybe we can argue that next week, actually. It'll be part of our conversation. It's whether we think Seinfeld is truly the king of all kings. I personally think it is, but there's some that would say, hey, Newhart was rad or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But we'll get into all that. Seinfeld, episode one.
We also actually looked at the old autopilot series docs this time to make sure we hadn't already done it.
Like Lost?
Like Lost, yeah.
Oops. You'll be happy to know I'm at season 3, episode 13 of Breaking Bad. I'm watching that over again. I was going to watch Lost over again, but for some reason, 24 episodes a season seemed daunting. And I knew
are you going to end up watching Seinfeld again? They're going to do this every
time. That's always on in our house. It's always on upstairs.
Is it really?
Well, yeah. Hulu, it's just a permanent repeat.
What's
the
deal with Seinfeld being on?
Exactly. So we never get sick of that, but we are going to do that. I'm very excited about it. That's next week right here on Current Geek. We'll be here live as usual. If you want to be here, I don't always say this, but I'll say it right now. We do this at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, so that's 4 p.m. Pacific, Tom's time. Right here at frogpants.tv, we do a live Current Geek every Tuesday night, unless we tell you otherwise. But most of the time, that's when we're here. So come on back next week. That's where we'll be. That's where you'll be. And we'll talk about the pilot episode of Seinfeld and its influence and the aftermath of a show like that and how was comedy on TV influenced by Seinfeld? And there are probably a billion ways that we won't even have time to cover, but we'll do as much as we can. I think that's everything. Tom Merritt, anything you want to say before we go?
Yeah, I am almost to the halfway point on funding the sequel to Pilot X. Pilot X was my time travel novel that I funded on Inkshares and is still out there if you're interested in picking it up. But if you want to know more about the adventures of Pilot X, first of all, read Pilot X, then fund Trigor on Inkshares.com. It's T-R-I-G-O-R. Go to Inkshares.com and just search T-R-I-G-O-R or search my name, Tom Merritt, and pre-order a copy. I need you to pre-order copies. If I get to 750 copies, it gets real published, real like in Barnes & Noble bookstores kind of published. So please, if you're at all interested, go check it out, inkshares.com/books/Trigor.
Only final thing I would say is I have been working really, at least in my head, since I was 8 years old to produce my own playing cards deck. That's right, kings, queens, jokers, jacks, suits, all that stuff. I finally am doing it. We're going to launch a Kickstarter for this thing. If you're interested in getting a deck and unlocking other bonus decks and some other cool stuff we have, maybe some custom like poker chips, maybe even a deck that has, how would you like a King Tom Merritt in a deck?
Whoa, I don't know. That's a lot of responsibility.
It is a lot. Off of their heads, you'd say. So we'll see how that goes, but we are very excited about it. It will appear any day now. Keep your eyes on frogpants.com or on my Twitter account at Scott Johnson. It's happening, and if you like that kind of stuff, I couldn't be more excited. Video's done. Everything's ready. I'm totally stoked. So there's that. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing you guys next week right here on Current Geek. Don't forget, you can support us at patreon.com/currentgeek, and you can find our website at currentgeek.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom. And what was that you had in your hand there, little puppet? We'll see you next time. I really thought it was a puppet.
It's a gallows.
You know why?
I have my hand everywhere.
Because I have video over here of you on big screen, and it's just peripheral, and it looked like you were talking with a puppet like this.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we update you on the tribal sovereign immunity strategy used in some pharma patent cases, and then review the reasons behind a surprising set of trends and how quickly open seats in the federal judicial system have been getting filled so far under President Trump. A few months back, we covered a case where a pharmaceutical company assigned all its patents to a Native American tribe and then argued tribal sovereign immunity of that tribe stopped those patents from being challenged for invalidity in government proceedings. Recently, Congress has introduced a bill that would exclude patent proceedings from what tribal sovereign immunity applies to, and that would eliminate this potential loophole. While it remains to be seen if this becomes law, do not be surprised if other similar loopholes are located and leveraged even if this one is addressed. In other words, never doubt the genius ideas of some litigators with big budgets and a lot of time. Turning to this week's main topic, the Trump presidency has certainly been marked with a lot of memorable news moments. However, other than the tax bill passed a few months ago, it's hard to point to many things that will be long-lasting legacies of this presidency so far. One notable exception to this is our subject today, the federal judiciary. While it may be easy to overlook, with sexier news stories always popping up into your attention and feed each week, the Trump administration has established unprecedented success in quickly nominating and gaining approval of new federal judges. Federal judges at all levels, from local courts to the Supreme Court, are appointed by the executive branch and then reviewed by the Senate for approval before joining the bench. And these are lifetime appointments for the judges. Thanks to the presidency and the Senate being held by the same party for this 2-year period, any opposition to Trump's generally conservative nominees has been mitigated. Here's some numbers to explain Trump's quick filling of the federal bench compared to prior presidents. He has nominated 69 potential judges to the bench in his first year in office, compared to 34 for Obama's first year. The Senate has already confirmed 29 of these judges, 15 of them at the Court of Appeals level or at the Supreme Court. That number of 15 high-level judge confirmations in 1 year is nearly more than the first years of the last three presidents combined, as Obama had 6, Bush 7, and Clinton 3. So the Trump administration is filling up a lot of the federal judiciary with judges who may hold more with his views than the judges that they may be replacing, and such a trend may be somewhat troubling. Why is this happening? In addition to the White House and the Senate being held by the same party, the obstructionist recent past of judicial nominations has been the primary driver to where we are today. During Obama's presidency, judicial nominations languished in front of the Senate as nobody could drive these nominations through to a vote, including most notably the year-long delay on Supreme Court nominee Merrick Garland before Obama left office. The obstructionism continued when Neil Gorsuch replaced Garland on the Supreme Court nominee docket, and all the while more and more open judicial seats were left unfilled thanks to retirements not being replaced. So it's clear why a critical mass of seats are there to fill. But the obstructionism of past Senates came to a head when the GOP removed the filibuster rule that used to apply to judicial nominees, making it possible to push for votes with only 50 members on board instead of 60 out of 100. Without these filibuster rules, a simple majority can push through a lot of nominees in a short period of time, and that's precisely what has happened. So while the overloaded dockets of federal courts caused by so many open seats is being addressed, the process for vetting and approving judicial nominees has changed significantly. Not surprisingly, one party had to be the first to take advantage of that situation. If a blue wave occurs in future elections, we may see similar results with Democrats in charge, but with different ideological judges, of course. However, the big crush of openings available in the judiciary won't likely repeat itself like this, meaning the long-lasting effect of the Trump presidency may be first and foremost a reshaping of the federal bench to be far more conservative for years to come. The bottom line is, when there's obstructionism in government processes, sometimes that forces only the cream of the crop to move forward. Unfortunately, it can also lead to opportunities like this one, and it may indeed be the biggest effect of that landmark 2016 election. We'll have to keep an eye on the courts moving forward to see exactly where they go.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.